The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to Kiefer and Curry, along with Kip Kiefer on the left-hand side of the screen. I'm Tony Curry. Of course, you can hear this show at least five times a week right here on the TKR app and wherever you're watching on our YouTube channel. And golly, Kip is all over the place. He's on Jocks. He's on Talk. He does terrestrial radio. We have a TV show, ABC 33, 40, 10, 30, 11 o'clock. What's the game, 11 o'clock game this Saturday? Do we know what that game is?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what ABC's kicking off with, but man, were they on fire this week.
Yeah, they were.
We had four marquee games and every one of them were on ABC.
That was unbelievable. And of course, it kicked off with the Clemson-Georgia game, which turned out to be, we got some problems with Clemson. And that's what we're going to talk about this week. You and I have been sitting here talking the last 45 minutes about, yeah, poor Dabo. After week one, and I mentioned this on another show, I was on a radio show in Knoxville, Tennessee this morning. We were talking about, okay, the sky is not falling. The antitrust laws have been refuted. We have lawyers, we have Congress talking about things. We've got NIL, we've got people making their $500 in the Madden game. Everyone seems to get a little happy here, despite the fact we have a lot of loose ends we need to tie up. But yeah, we had college football this past weekend. By the way, I wanted to throw something out I thought was really interesting. We set a record this past weekend. 36 football teams this past Saturday scored 50 points or more.
Wow.
In college football. So if you're into the scoring, I don't know if the 2 minute, which is not the 2 minute warning, it's the 2 minute timeout. I don't know if that had anything to do with any of that scoring type of, but there was a lot of scoring. Yeah. If you like that, there were four teams in the SEC that scored 60 plus. DeBoer looked fantastic. And of course, Alabama didn't have to show a whole lot. UAB got it done. And of course, Hugh Freeze, he went crazy with the Auburn Tigers. But well, what's your overall assessment? I kind of want to get your idea of what really stuck out to you. We got the pros coming up here starting this week. And I know we're going to be jumping into the pros. We'll have plays, by the way. K4 Wins is our website that you can go to. What's your website where everything you have up is?
The landing page with all the links to all of our shows is kqshows.com.
kqshows.com. kqshows.com. And then we have K4 Wins, which is a handicapping page. And we also have a podcast called k4wins.com, which airs at 8:10. And then again on Saturday mornings, 8:10 on Friday. And then again on Saturday mornings. Oh, I'm sorry, 8:10 on Saturday mornings. And then throughout the day, that you can listen to handicapping, free plays, and everything else, which is really, really good. Anything particular, your typical blowouts in week one? Oregon was really, really interesting. I didn't think the Vandals were good.
But I think you just, a couple of things you just said. First of all, you said the pros start this week. Mm-hmm. I think the pros started this past weekend I think college football has made that transition, Tony. And I think the blowouts and all of the ridiculous scores, yeah, we've come to expect that. But generally, a blowout used to be considered 45-7 or 48-10. These games were 76-0, yep. 73-3. The disparity is already begun. All of these big money operations, these giant schools, you can just start to wave goodbye to the cupcake games because the disparity is becoming so wide. And Alabama A&M or Chattanooga, I mean, these Division II schools, you know, they have no chance to compete. But when Western Kentucky and Furman, which are both very credible programs in terms of their accomplishments at the next level and have been at least competitive in games with the bigger schools in the past, they get beat this week collectively. Let me do some quick calculation. 128-9. Nothing.
Yeah.
Yikes. This is out of control. These are not little sisters of the poor schools. These are schools that went to bowl games last year.
Sometimes though, I feel like it's not necessarily bad. Obviously, it's a big thing for these recruits to say, hey, listen, if you come to Linwood, we're going to get our ass beat week three against Alabama.
Course.
But you get a chance to go to Brian Denny. I mean, some of these teams.
And you get a big check.
You get a big check and you want to know. And of course, the best of both worlds is when you get that big check and you end up winning. I mean, I think I saw where Idaho is getting $1.2 million against Oregon.
That makes their whole program budget. That's the argument for it. And I want to credit a guy named Daniel who called into the morning after our Sunday show on WJOX when I was railing against the nonsensity of cupcake games. And he made a great point, Tony, that I think you'll appreciate. He said, you know, the cupcake games are not very attractive. You're a season ticket holder. It's like, okay, it's a necessary evil. He says, but one thing you are not considering for a regular family that can't buy Tide Pride, season tickets, seat licenses, yes, spend thousands and thousands of dollars to be able to be privileged enough to go to games. These games give people a chance to maybe have one opportunity a year to take their family, take their kids to an Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, LSU game. If they're playing a lesser opponent, the tickets are much more affordable on the secondary market because a lot of the big money people don't want to go to those games, and it really provides John Q. Public a chance to actually go to a game with his family, and I had never really considered that.
No, I do. I mean, I have. We were at the Western Kentucky game. Tickets were $55 a piece. Of course, my
son,
he wanted to sit in the lower bowl area. We could have gotten in probably for about $30 a piece. I remember taking him to a Florida game at Bryan Denny about 10, 12 years ago. Tickets were $75 a piece. That was Florida, and that's when Florida was good. And I always thought that once television got involved to the point where almost, we're going to go way back here, Alabama, Auburn, UAB probably wasn't on at all. They probably had no television games, but the big schools had three TV games. You'd had a network game, another game, and then you'd have the PPV game. And then everything else, you had to go watch the game. And then we also had, you brought this up on a previous show, we had blackouts, you know, where, you know, if the game wasn't sold out, we had blackouts, we had people trying to buy all the tickets so you could watch them. So I'm thinking to myself that once games were always on television, that maybe it would bring the prices down a little bit to the point where, quite frankly, listen, I'm 58 years old. It was 92 degrees. Somehow we went in the student section at Bryant Denny. And if you go in the student section, we took the big ramp all the way to the top just in time for the flyover and then realized we couldn't get down to the lower bowl from that side. So we went all the way back down. Ugh. When we got down, we were told we couldn't leave and come back in again. So I'm like, how the hell are we supposed to get over to the other side? And for some reason, there's got to be a way. Somehow I end up slide a 20 to some dude and said, please let me just cut under this line and get over here and blah, blah, blah. And we were on our way. But yeah, it's the point now where my son wants to go and I'm like, okay, let's go ahead and pick one of these cheap games to go because I don't know, everything else is going to be in the hundreds, 200s. We talked about the top 15 games, seven of those games are going to be Georgia games. The Georgia-Texas game is already going for over $1,000 a ticket. And that's just to get in.
I'm embarrassed to tell you the package I have purchased for the Georgia game.
I would love to hear it.
It is a awfully expensive enterprise, but I'm out of the attitude. This is going to be one of the games of the year. I'm not going to miss it. My broadcast partner for many years, Terry Quillian's going to be in town. She's a Georgia graduate. This is a big deal. My son and his girlfriend. So I'm shooting the works, Tony, but I'm going to be having to take some side jobs. I'm hoping Walmart has some shelf stocker positions so I can pay for my Alabama Georgia tickets.
That's awesome. That's great. I thought you were talking about Georgia Texas. Are you doing Georgia Texas?
Possibly, but I guess a lot of that depends on the outcomes of this game. Yeah. This game coming up. If Georgia or Texas loses long, if they're both undefeated, it's probably a worthwhile venture. The problem with the Texas Georgia game, it's in Austin, and it's scheduled on the same weekend as the Formula One race in Austin. It is going to be the biggest cluster you've ever seen. Yeah. Getting hotel rooms and of course the Georgia nation suspects that this was finagled somehow by Texas because with the last time Georgia went on a major road venture to a strange place, if you remember the game at Notre Dame a couple of years ago, Georgia had 40,000 people descend on South Bend, and really there were more Georgia fans in Harold. Did Notre Dame Stadium than there were Notre Dame fans. And Texas, there's a big conspiracy theory that Texas intentionally scheduled or lobbied to get that game scheduled on that week. weekend, so the Georgia invasion would be negated. So there's already bad blood boiling behind the scenes there.
Yeah, that is going to be a heck of a weekend. Did you obviously, I've made some promises with my son. I never forget, we used to have a program director, he's a really big guy, and he had a son, and my program director was a huge Ohio State fan, and this was maybe 10, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And told his son, listen, if Ohio State, the Buckeyes ever go to a national championship, we're going. And so, sure enough, Ohio State makes the national title game. I can't remember which year it was. So he buys a couple of $6,000 packages, and he's a program director at a classic rock station. He's not making that kind of money, but he has a friend of his. He's pwned up only at $5,500. So they're all fixing to go. Well, you know, a week before the game, his 9-year-old comes up to him and says, wait a minute, Dad, I thought you said if Ohio State ever makes a national championship game, we're going. And he was like,
oh, wow.
And he's like, well, yeah. So he had to call his buddy and say, listen, I promised my son I was going to take him to a national championship, knowing that, you know, obviously a 50-year-old is going to appreciate a game a little bit differently than a 9-year-old would. And if he takes his 9-year-old, he's picking up an $11,000 trip now instead of a $5,500 trip. And wow. So he did. Then, of course, Ohio State made the playoffs the following year. They lost that first year. They made the playoffs the following year, like, because daddy can't afford this anymore. So I have a deal with my deal where my son, where if the Bengals make the Super Bowl, we're going. I said, we're going to the Super Bowl if they make a Super Bowl. And this year, I think, is their shot. I think if Joe stays healthy, he's been banged up. He missed 7 games last year. Their schedule is a joke. It's the 4th easiest joke in the National Football League. I think they should win 13 games. And then the home field advantage. And then the game will be in New Orleans, I believe, for Super Bowl 50-59. And so that's one of those things where, you know, you better start saving it now because, you know, it more than likely will happen. It's going to be kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I had a really interesting phone call. We're talking about college football pro stuff too. info@tonycurryradio.net. If you want to drop us a line, you know, we were talking about games where you see games like 56-0.5 or 42-0.5, and then they rest their players. And I always hear this story about coaches who don't want to show too much. And I always thought that was funny because you ask any coach and they're like, yeah, don't take this team seriously, and then find out how it feels. And Gene Stallings was really good about that. You know, lose to Western Kentucky and tell me if it's a cupcake game, you know, lose a game like that. We've seen that happen. Ask App State and Michigan how that all went down. So, and that's a game that I will always remember. I remember seeing that game thinking, is this really happening? But I said, do you really have a playbook for a game that you're winning, you should win by 30. And then do you have a playbook where, I didn't really want to reach in this grab bag. It looks like we're going to have to. And then another, and he's like, absolutely. He goes, every coach has got it. They'll never tell you they do. He said, but yeah, we go into a game like Western Kentucky. We know we should win by 30. And they won by 38. He said, but then he said, we have the playbook to win, the winning playbook. We have the, I didn't want to go there playbook. And then we have the holy crap playbook. And that's the one where you're pulling out trick plays and all kinds of shit. And you're like, wow, I didn't think we're going to have to, because you do have conference play. You have bigger games down the road and you don't want to show your hand. And I'm like, so coaches really,
of course not.
He said, absolutely. He said, coaches will look at every single play and they know that, you know, there's a lot of teams that we're looking at. Alabama's playbook after they played South Florida, because they had to go to the holy crap playbook. It shouldn't have been a 7 or 10 point ball game. It was a close ball game. They've got them next, but sometimes things just aren't working out. They match up differently than you thought on paper. And next thing you know, you're having to make it. And I thought that was really interesting because coaches will always tell you, we take every game seriously. And you know, it's our A game and everyone's going to play and blah, 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 blah. We don't treat anything like a cream puff. But the truth of the matter is sometimes they do. They have a different playbook for all that.
Well, it's essential to do that too, because in this day and age of just unbelievable amounts of data that come out of all sports, baseball has gotten ridiculous. I mean, they break down every, I mean, now's spin rate on pitches and there's actually data on every second of every game, and football's the same way, where if you run your offense with any consistency whatsoever, they're going to pick up trends right away that are going to help them defend you. So this early part of the season is always kind of a shell game where you don't want to reveal a whole lot of what you're scheming to do full time. And But and the fact that these games still get out of hand like this is just another argument to support my assertion that the gap is widening more and more between the elite programs and the have-nots. And the other thing is that I want to make a point of this because it's kind of related to the discussion. 2 years ago, when Georgia just absolutely annihilated poor TCU in the national championship game, there and continue to be people that, again, my partner Terry lives in Texas, and when she wears a Georgia shirt or something, she still gets harangued by TCU fans of saying, well, I hope you guys enjoyed, quote, running up the score against us.
Whatever.
Georgia was handing the ball off. They had a kid named Branson Robinson, a freshman who was a heralded kid who didn't play hardly at all season. He was in the game, the fourth or fifth string tailback. What's he supposed to do, Tony? You give him the ball, he's just supposed, oh, here's my chance. I'm playing college football. I'll just take a knee here. No. I'll just dive into the pile. He ran for two, like 40-yard touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and good for that kid.
Should you be
he's worked his whole life to play. You don't ask a kid to go out there and dog it. That's ridiculous.
Should you be throwing a skinny post, you know, if you're at 48 nothing? No.
Exactly.
I get that.
Or a double reverse Spurrier did once against Georgia.
Which I love, by the way.
He's a 48.
I'm throwing footballs to tight ends and wide receivers. I'm letting my running backs run, and I'm letting my offensive lines, these guys don't get a chance to play very often.
But you got
to
let these kids play. You can't ask them to go out there and not, you know, they're on national TV. It's the national championship game.
Absolutely.
What's this kid, a true freshman who was playing high school football last year, he's supposed to go out there and not try to perform at his highest level? His future's on the line too. That attitude is so ridiculous. If you're going to live in this world where there's big money, in Pee Wee football, okay, you don't run up the score. But when you get even to the elite levels of high school football and college, and particularly the NFL, if you're not good enough to stop the other team, just shut your mouth and accept the fate that you got to get better. They don't need to compromise what they're doing because your feelings might get hurt if the score gets out of hand.
Certainly at that level, when you're talking about a team playing for a national championship, or run the score up, do whatever you want. That's what you do. And you, obviously as a fan, we don't want to see a whole lot of that, but you just said something I thought was really interesting, because I think a lot of people thought that since we were going from 4 to 12 teams, that, and I hate the word parody, parody's all over. The word unprecedented has come up a lot in our vernacular, and parody. Everyone's parody is good for everything because everyone has a shot. Well, everyone's got a shot because we all start 0-0. And if you get the best football team, you're going to have a shot, right? And it's not about giving, 12-year-olds trophies. I'm not even going to go there. But it does give you an opportunity now to play postseason ball. It used to be if you went to a bowl game, that was a good thing. Now I can make an argument that, you know, Auburn going to a bowl game ain't necessarily a good thing for Hugh Freeze. You win 6 games, whatever. That's not good for an Auburn program that should be winning 9 or 10 or 11 bowl games every single year. For smaller programs, perhaps it is a good thing. For like a Colorado, you know, a Deion Sanders to be winning 6 games and go to a bowl game at Colorado, a school that's been an Epsom for so long, that would be a huge get for them. But I wonder how coaches are now going to be looked about. What is the edge mark? What is the benchmark for being considered a good hire or a good coach? It used to be you made March Madness. And again, if you're Michigan State, that's not nearly enough. If you're Kentucky, you're expected to go to the Final Four every year. But I'm just talking about mediocre regular programs. But what's going to be like in an SEC school? Are you expected to make the Final 12 every single year? My first question is, if you're Alabama and you don't make the Final 12, that is a miss. That is not good. And quite frankly, I would go with a lot of programs in the SEC. I think Florida used to be there, probably not. Ole Miss should be there. A&M should be there based on the facilities and the money they've got. There's about
LSU,
4 or 5
schools. Tennessee.
LSU, yeah. Tennessee, those schools, if you don't make the Final 12 every single year, that to me,
it's a failure.
It's a failure. It's disparaging, and it's just not a good thing. But the other thing you brought up was really interesting. Are we kind of sugarcoating a turd here? And what I mean is, yeah, you can come into the party of 12, but there's no way in hell you're going to win a national title. This is going to give the Boise States, the Cincinnatis, the Liberties, some of these smaller schools an opportunity to play on a major stage, which is going to be great for recruiting. And I love that for these schools. And that's one of the reasons I love March Madness. But you just mentioned the fact that the rich get richer, and you believe the parity is kind of going out the door. Right now, I can make an argument that I think Kirby Smart will win more national championships than Nick Saban. That's how good
he is right now. On the trajectory to do that, because he's built is phenomenal.
It's unbelievable. He was 140 regular season games in a row in the SEC. I don't think people understand. That's incredible. If he's 42 overall, it really is. Even Nick Saban didn't do that. And he's
43-2 in their last 45 games.
And I don't see where they're not going to be, much like Alabama, I don't see where they're not going to be favored to win the national title every year. Kirby Smart's going to be there, and Kirby Smart's never going to leave. Kirby Smart will leave when he retires, just like Nick Saban did. And Nick Saban, quite frankly, was the only other guy, only because he's beat him a couple of times, that could compete with that. But I don't even know if Ohio State, they didn't look really good this past weekend. I don't know if Ryan Day, he seems like he can't get that Michigan monkey off his back. They've been beaten three times in a row by Michigan. Now, of course, Harbaugh's gone, so maybe that'll change things. But there's some programs, but those two programs, it's just amazing what they're doing. But I don't like the fact that a lot of people are like, this is great because we're going to see different teams in the playoffs. You are for one week.
Well, there's unrealistic expectations for this playoff. First of all, it is controversial to me. And again, I appreciate what you're saying. Yes. The uniqueness of a tournament like this to kind of mimic in a smaller version the NCAA basketball tournament, it gives a little guy a chance. But my problem with that is the way it works, the non-power conferences, which now are considered the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Big 12, every other conference, the champion of one of those conferences that is the highest rated team at the end of the year gets a playoff berth. And that's a good system for inclusion. But then you kind of start looking at it from the standpoint that last year SMU would have been in the tournament if it was this year, the winner of the American Athletic Conference, but they were the 24th ranked team in the country. Yep. That means they're going to make the top 12 in the tournament and leapfrog the other 11 teams that are ranked ahead of them. First of all, just on premise, that's a violation of what the College Football Playoff Committee's mission statement on their own website is last year and previous years to select the four best teams for the playoff.
And they brought that up again. They brought that up again this year. The director came out and he made it a real strong point. He goes, listen to me, really, this is not the 12 deserving teams. This is the 12 best teams. Yeah, continue.
And Saban said it on the first game day too. Saban said, I'm uncomfortable with the playoff system because this committee has demonstrated that they are determined to give teams that they feel like deserve recognition that are not necessarily one of the best teams. So my point is really, so you get one automatic qualifier in there that doesn't belong in terms of the best teams definition. But my fear is, and SEC fans need to prepare for this, there are nine teams, Tony, in the top 25 early first poll of the season from the SEC. 9 out of 25. So at the end of the year, if you've got, let's say, six two-loss teams or less in the SEC, there's only, once you take out the automatic conference champions in the four power conferences, that's four spots, including an SEC team. You've got the automatic qualifier from the other conference, that's five. So now we're only talking about seven spots. And if the SEC's got five or six teams, they're not going to get four or five more berths. They're going to get maybe one, maybe two. So I'm thinking that because the committee is going to have the desire to look at the ACC, which obviously is a league that's a step behind now and getting the Gulf is getting further. Maybe the Big 12 is more on par, but the Big 10 is going to get probably equal consideration. So you're really only going to end up with about four spots with maybe 8 or 10 deserving teams, most of them from the SEC. And Nick Saban was saying, if they don't pick the best teams, this is going to be a giant mess. And there's going to be more controversy than ever, because instead of one or two teams being just devastated and pissed off that they're left out. You're going to have six or seven teams having a true platform to be complaining about being left out.
Should that be
going to be really interesting?
Should that be enough? I mean, if we're looking down the road in year seven of this new format, there have been six national championship games and there's been six SEC winners and Georgia's won four of those six. People are going to go, this sucks. It's too top heavy. But what could they possibly do? By giving them the 12 spots, they are allowing people to at least wish and wonder.
Yeah.
And that's why
give some teams a chance.
That's why March Madness is so good. And it is great for recruiting. And SMU to make a Final 12, they can hang a banner for that. They will hang a banner. SMU would hang a banner.
Oh, for sure.
For saying,
absolutely.
I don't even know what that'd be called if you made the Final 12 or whatever. And you better believe there's going to probably be bracket challenges too. I mean, you could do a bracket with 12 teams. But you just wonder in your lifetime, will we see a team like an SMU who, if they were playing a Georgia, what would that line be right now? 26, 27, 28, 29. I mean, it
would be at least. Yeah.
And you can make an argument that both those teams could make the playoffs this year based on the numbers you said.
Oh, for sure.
Do we want to see a 26-point game? But I think that's where Georgia is just so much better than everyone else. And I think that, you know, I knew Kirby was going to be good. His career has just been so great because obviously one under the greatest coach we've ever seen. He got his tutelage and all the information he needed to do. He sounds just like Nick Saban. He's not a lot of fun to talk to on an interview by any stretch. He always looks disheveled. He's starting to look like Joe Cocker every time I see Kirby Smart.
He looks like my son remarked the other day when they showed him, he says, because my son Clayton's had a great summer, he's lost about 50 pounds, he goes, well, I know where all my weight's going, it's on Kirby now. He's not missing any meals over there while he works his ass off.
But I mean, he has done a wonderful job using the transfer portal, of course, more five-star guys, and he knows what to stick at.
And still high school recruiting, Alabama and Georgia still are setting the standard in that, and they're building programs the right way, because I think this year is going to play out. We've watched Florida State implode 2 weeks in a row now. Jeez. Against what's considered lesser teams in their own conference, but Florida State basically has bought and paid for their entire defense this year, trying to recover from what happened last year. And Tony, so far, the test of mercenaries for hire meshing as a cohesive unit, not working at Florida State. Their $1 million, $5 million, whatever it was, defensive line of blue chip guys that they bought and paid for are getting owned at the line of scrimmage. So far, not so good for the transfer portal to rebuild your team theory.
Great thought and great point. Because a lot of people thought, okay, we need to fill these holes. We used to go JUCO. Now we're just going to go ahead and spend, you know, I need $3 million by next Thursday. Could I get this five-star guy out of wherever, Louisville, to come to play for a football program? And again, Colorado has 132 transfers in their first 2 years. 132.
It's unbelievable.
You can't win championships. And now, if he's going to go to the portal and bring in 50 new guys, so he brought in 52 this year, he brought in 81 last year. If he's going to bring in 50 new guys every year, first of all, it didn't work last year. They started 3-0 and everyone was like, oh my gosh, we were putting Deion Sanders in the Hall of Fame for coaching. And I was like, just pump the brakes already. We saw what happened in the rest of the season. I'm not saying he's not going to be successful there at some stretch, but now if he would win six games, that would be successful Colorado. And he's bringing a ton of notoriety to HBCUs, which he did obviously at his previous school. And he's good for the sport. He's a great interview. But yeah, if you think you can just go out there and buy those players and insert and go, okay, the chemistry is going to be fine, it doesn't work that way. It never has. I mean, ask John Calipari at Kentucky. We kept saying, is he just going to have 5-1 and duns every year? And
that's Kentucky's a great, that's a great
and
example.
And he's going to win the national championship every year? Well, he hadn't won a national championship in like nearly 15 or 16 years.
It stopped working.
And he decided to split. He hadn't been to a Final Four in 6 or 7 years. So he's bringing in the number one guys. And of course, he'll say, listen, it's not about the championships. It's about what my players do from this point on with their lives. I have created like $3.7 billion in revenue just for players, because those players obviously all go to the NBA. But if you're not winning national championships in Kentucky, then, you know, why are you bringing these kids in? You have to have. And so I understand where Dabo is kind of like,
Well, that's why I wanted to get to Dabo, because Dabo is the extreme example of, I don't like this system. I'm not going to participate in this. I want to bring my players in the way I always have. I want to build a team. I want to build a culture. And he's not wrong. But Tony, you can't just say, with everything happening around you, you can't just dig in and say, I want to do it the old way. I'm going to do it the way I've always known how, because Dabo is going to get left behind. The key is to do what Nick Saban was doing and Kalen DeBoer has inherited, to do what Kirby Smart's doing, still keep your grassroots, expand your staff, do whatever you have to do. Get the blue chip high school guys and develop them while you fill spaces in needs in your lineup. Alabama, already a great example. Everybody was saying their Malachi Moore is the only defensive back they're going to have back. They're going to be weak in the secondary. The kid from Michigan, Sapp, that they got in the portal, had two interceptions and looked spectacular in the first game. So you can fill those holes, but I'm been a believer. We're going to see Ole Miss put to the test too, because Lane Kiffin basically brought in 9 frontline players for his defense, which was abysmal last year. They were scoring points in droves, but you still got to mesh those into a unit. And even the early look at LSU the other night against USC, their defense was terrible last year. They've tried to bring in a bunch of transfers. I'm just not sure that really trying to completely overhaul your defense with paid assassins is the way to go, because I don't think you have time to really, and football is a different game. You've got to have cohesiveness and guys buying in and playing as a unit. It's not, football is the ultimate not individual game, particularly in the trenches. You've got to have guys that you know you can count on, brothers that have your back. Football was invented as a imitation of war. That was the origins of football. You're fighting for turf. You're fighting for territory. And the early parts of football was strictly just pounding the ball, running it straight ahead. There was no innovation. There was no trick plays. There was no passing. But part of war is aerial attack too. So football mimics war. And you know, again, history will teach us in situations where soldiers or mercenaries and paid participants, they do not fare as well as motivated people all on board for a single cause. And I think that's what Kirby Smart and Nick Saban and some of the great coaches have created. And some of these other guys need to catch up.
I was a guy 10 or 15 years ago. I would have told you that Brian Kelly is going to win a national title in his career. I don't think that's going to happen at this point. He can pound the table all he wants after that game. And again, it was a game. He's like, all my players did everything I was asked to do, and we still screwed it up. We're not listening. And again, that comes, and I'm tired of hearing the coach say, it comes down to me. Norvell even said that after the game last night, I got to do a better job of coaching. Okay, well, you're getting paid big time bucks, then do your job. Yeah. I don't want to hear about the coach having to do a better. Jimbo Fisher, another guy, had won a national title. They don't bring him into Texas A&M to do what he did. And that's why they let him go and then give him a $70 million payroll. You said something else, and we got to fly. I could talk about this all day. A lot of people thought because of the transfer portal, recruiting wasn't going to be as important as it has been in the past. I can make an argument now that I think it's more important than it's ever been.
More important.
Because it is more important. Because you go, well, I can miss on that guy, but I've got $15 million in my portal and my money, and I can go ahead and buy the guy if I want to. First of all, you need to go get the best guys. And then you need to keep the best guys. You got to find those guys that, believe it or not, are make a little money on the side. And I'll say Jacob Zeno, for an example, of UAB, was offered $400,000 to leave UAB. He stayed put. I don't know why he did that. I don't know if it was a mother-father thing. Tua Tagovailoa, a shot where he had an opportunity to leave when Jalen Hurts obviously got the starting job. What did he do? He stayed put. Now he's the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. So sometimes you had to work through it, and go through it is the best thing to do. Failure is not necessarily a bad thing. But you can make an argument that right now recruiting is the most important thing. And I think it was last year or 2 years ago, there were only two schools out of the 134 schools that had zero transfers, that didn't have one guy transfer out of their school. And I think it were Ohio State and Michigan, which should tell you that it's like working a restaurant. You know, if you go to the same restaurant every single night, and they have the same good looking waitresses and the same great service every single night, I'll eat there every single night. If I go in there and every time I go in there, if there's a different waitress, that tells me two things. First of all, the waitressing's, they're not happy. They're not happy working here because they can't keep a good waitress. And second of all, the food probably sucks. And so, you know, when you got recruits and you got players that sign up at Alabama or LSU or SMU or whatever, and they want to stay, or a UAB, that says a lot about your coaching staff and about how you're doing things. And Dabo Swinney, I can't believe we're saying this, and the word is out there. Whenever you see bad first things happening to an individual, and I know it happened to Gus Malzahn a lot. Every week it was like, this is the most points that Gus has ever given up, or Auburn hadn't done this since 1932. It was all bad stuff. When they say that Dabo's never been in a game where he only scored 3 points, had never been beaten that bad in an opening game, period. Those are the things you don't want to hear from a program that certainly lost 4 games last year, but ended up winning your last 5. Buy the stock while it's high. Well, guess what? The stock has just fallen through the floor again. That game wasn't even close. And some people are trying to make an argument that the first half was good. It wasn't. Kirby Smart is the best 40-minute coach I've ever seen. He plays every minute down to the thing. He may be up 10-3 at half, but he'll beat you 58-3 by the end of the ball game. He uses every single minute. He wears you down. And by the second half, you're like, wow, our first half looked really... How many coaches do you think play Kirby Smart and go, well, the first half, we were looking really good. In the second half, it just falls apart. They just get blown out. But I can't believe there's some people actually... My son just left for Clemson. There are some people that are actually saying maybe Dabo's time has left him. And I'm like... how old is he? He's won 2 championships. Seriously? Yep. I mean, boosters are saying, Dabo, get on it, brother. Let's go to the transfer portal. Let's start shopping a little bit like everyone else is. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
You got to play the game.
Yeah, you really know? Do. You got to do it right. Speaking of playing the game.
I know we got to wrap, but one final point to really emphasize the Kirby Smart culture. Last year, Georgia was the number one team in the country, undefeated, going into the SEC championship game. Alabama played a great game. Georgia, you don't use injuries for an excuse, but they were banged up, and Alabama played and Alabama did what you do on a team that's banged up. You exploit their weaknesses, and Alabama did a great job. Jalen Milroe played the best, most disciplined game of his career. Alabama beat Georgia fair and square. But Georgia, being the number one team, dropped, Tony, to the number 6 spot in the poll. That was huge. And all the clamor, all of the bitching, all of the complaining came from Florida State, because they did win their conference. They were undefeated, but they lost their quarterback, who was their leader. They limped to the finish line, barely winning their last couple games with an offense that wasn't very good. There were 4 other conference championships that had equally impressive resumes, blah, blah, blah. But all you heard was Florida State complaining. You didn't hear Georgia complaining. Nope. That Kirby Smart said, hey, we had our shot. We didn't get it done. You know, so be it. But the real example of these cultures and these programs, those teams were matched in the Orange Bowl last year. The Orange Bowl, prime time, big deal, major New Year's Bowl. And Florida State had 30 players opt out saying, well, we didn't get to go to the championship game. We're not playing in the Orange Bowl. Georgia had not only their full roster, nobody opted out. They went and played in the Orange Bowl. Brock Bowers was playing on one leg. Ladd McConkey, both from first round draft picks on Georgia. Both those guys could have said, hey, I'm going to get ready for the NFL. I'm not playing in this meaningless game. They all showed up because they are Georgia Bulldogs, and they beat Florida State 63-3. Florida State was undefeated until that game and lost by 60 points in the Orange Bowl. And I think there's some carryover, Tony, to what we're seeing right now with Florida State getting off to the staggering 0-2 start. I think that butt whooping really set that program back, and it proves that Florida State had just a bunch of guys that were just there for the glory and not there and for their own personal enhancement, and not there to be part of a team where Georgia has completely the opposite atmosphere. And I think it's a great illustration of where we are right now in major college football.
Great point. I could certainly make an argument. FSU's injuries went further than just their quarterback, but it is amazing how much different that offense looked with Jordan Travis.
It was brutal. They lost their number two quarterback in the interim. Yeah. So by the end of the year, they were on the number three guy who had not played at all. And remember, they did beat Louisville on the ACC championship game, but it was ugly.
But you know what?
13-9.
There's a guy at Alabama, Tua Tagovailoa, who didn't take a lot of snaps and was brought into the halftime of the national championship game.
Yes.
When you're FSU, when you're Clemson, when you're Alabama, when you're Auburn, when you're Ohio State, when you're Michigan, you should be. I realize those secondary quarterbacks, the second, third string guys aren't getting all the snaps during the week, but they should be good enough that you should come in and they shouldn't fall through the floorboard like FSU's done. Norvell is on the hot seat. And I can imagine he should be. I mean, he should be. That was excruciating to watch that Boston College game. This is Boston College.
They got their ass whipped. Call it what it was. At home, in front of all the big crowd, with Chief Osceola running around on his horse with his spear, they took an ass whooping.
With the idea, knowing they can't lose again. Everyone kept saying, okay, well, you know, good news. We're taking 12 teams this year. You lost a game, but you just can't lose again. Now, is FSU going to lose again? I don't know. But this was must win for FSU. You can't lose, and it's Boston College. They weren't playing Miami of Florida, which is not a great football team, but certainly better than them. They weren't playing a great school. They're playing Boston College, and you get beat at home. I'm unbelievable. Amazing.
Great for Bill O'Brien, by the way.
Good for him.
He's brought in almost a completely NFL staff and is running Boston College's program now like a professional team because, again, we're going to have to get used to the idea. This is basically professional football now, but it's professional football that don't even have contracts for players. At least you can control a player in pro football for a couple of years and know he's going to be part of your team. This is just the wild, wild west where you can hitch up your wagon and haul ass anytime you feel like it. It's got to get put under control, but good for Bill O'Brien. He has a son that's had like serious a brain injury or maybe a tumor. I'm not sure, but it's been a real rough road for him throughout his career. He had the stint here at Alabama's offensive coordinator, and a lot of people, because Nick Saban is so glorified, the assistants never got any credit, but they always got a lot of blame at Alabama if things didn't go right. It couldn't be Nick's fault. It has to be the assistant. And so I have people, you say Bill O'Brien to Alabama fans, oh, he was terrible here. I think they still had a pretty high rate of success. And he worked for Belichick, and he coached it. He took over a tough time when the Penn State scandal and Joe Paterno, he was the guy who stepped in. He coached the Houston Texans. He's had a very, very strong coaching career. And to see him go back to basically his hometown and lead Boston College to a glorious start, and who knows how that's going to play out for the rest of the year, but it's a real good feel-good story, I think, because I think Bill Bryan's pretty much a class act and a coach that we should respect.
No doubt. He had a raw deal at Alabama. I mean, he did what he had to do, and I think he was thinking pro, a lot of pro, because, I mean, he's a pro guy, and but obviously now on the college level, I think you're right. I think wherever he goes, he can take that dimple in his chin and take it anywhere and win. I did want to bring up one thing, and you brought something up, because I did a show with The Inferno with Trent Dilfer a couple days ago, UAB podcast, and they're going to play UML. If you're looking for great storylines, they're going to play La Monroe this weekend at 6:00 on Saturday. And I was asked not to bring up Brian Vincent, who, of course, is their head coach. Brian Vincent, of course, was the offensive coordinator at Alabama Birmingham at UAB, was up for that head coaching job after Bill Clark left, was an interim coach, did a nice job, had a winning record there. And then, of course, they went on and got Trent. I was like, well, why don't we want to talk about that? Because that's a pretty interesting matchup. I mean, they're going outside the conference. They're going to the Sun Belt.
A lot of history there.
And a lot of UAB fans, you know, really like Brian Vincent, thought he should have had a shot at a head coaching job. He took 18 administrators from UAB when he left.
No kidding. Yeah. Wow.
I was like, well, how many coaches did he take? Two or three? He's like, no, he took 18 people. So there's no love lost there. So
No kidding. That is unbelievable.
If you're looking for, you know, if he's got the opportunity to maybe lay the wood a little bit this weekend, I'm not sure what the line is on that. You may want to look at that and watch us on ABC 3340 on Saturday morning. We'll have it for you. That may be my game of the week right there. If they get up early, you may see them take it out to the woodshed. So just a little story. To be enough, and that's the kind of stuff.
That might be a good tip for folks, because I believe I just glanced at lines last night. I think UAB is only like an 8-point favorite. Yeah. So if that's the case, and you're saying they might be extra incentivized.
If there's some incentive there, then
they may not be calling off the dogs in the fourth quarter.
Well, and Trent told me, he said when he left, they changed passwords, they turned computers off, they turned stuff in. They had to. And he's like, no, he said they took 18. I was like, wow.
God, that's a massive. I had no idea. That's an incredible story.
Yeah, fun game to watch. All right, man, keep doing your thing, and I will see you on Saturday morning for the ABC starting lineups. It's going to be a great show. We're going to have some more picks, so make sure you go to k4wins.com for all of our free picks. You get all kinds of free stuff. Kai Gregory is also on there, along with your wonderful son there, calling from the desert, and we'll get after it. It'll be here before you know it, my friend.
We had Boston College last night, stone cold. If you'd been on K4Wins, now I'm doing the same thing. Is it? We always get these backwards.
K4Wins.
K4Wins.
We had Boston College, and of course, your son had a big under on the LSU game. Everyone was calling for the over 69, thought that thing was going to blow out. So we're already hitting an early play. So, get
that's
after
for sure.
My plays sucked it up. I guess
I mean, it's tough this part of the year. You got to see the teams, you take some shots and you take your medicine, but, we'll do better this week. And our initial performance on K4 Wins is outstanding. Yep. So we've got a good team of experts, and it's great information. So much fun talking football with you, Tony Curry.
Thank you, brother. We'll catch up here in a couple days.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.